And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, live from a hotel room with a glorious view of freezing cold Toronto, Ontario, Canada, my NBA home away from home. The Sky Dome is right over there. I can see the Sky Dome. And joining me, our newest ESPN acquisition. I don't know what NBA free agent you are. I don't know who we have to compare.
Somebody really cheap.
Tim Bontemps. How you doing?
I'm good, man. This is, I think I've gotten more comments about being on The Low Post the first time 4 years ago or so than anything else I've done. So people enjoy the pod.
You need to do more stuff. First of all, let's make one thing clear. The Rogers Center is the Sky Dome.
Correct.
And
somebody who grew up 3 hours from here, I agree.
And the Scotia Bank, whatever, is the Air Canada Center.
Yes.
Forever.
Yes.
Screw Scotia Bank.
It's a terrible name.
It's terrible.
Terrible.
And I'm now in trouble with the Scotiabank people.
Don't put your money in Scotiabank. You'll be
and,
all right.
And look, Air Canada is just another company. But when you have the happenstance of a company, of a corporate shill arrangement that actually sounds like it fits the sport.
Right. Plus, it's got Canada in the name. We're in Canada. It fits that way.
Vince Carter was kind of Air Canada for a second. Like, that was his fourth nickname on Basketball Reference.
That's right.
It's like when the Celtics had the Fleet Center. You could at least talk like Fleet is fast. It's basketball. And then it became the TD Bank North Colossus in Boston.
At least now they just call it the TD Garden. At least that's better.
I believe they're the only team without the arena name on the court anywhere. It's on the baseline, but it's not on the court.
That's your domain as Mr. Expert on mascots and courts. Among other,
you enjoyed
basketball.
When the Raptor came and said hello to me.
Oh, it was great. Raptor comes by, gives Zach a massage, says hello. I tweet about it. The Raptor then comes back and apologizes for no reason because I just thought it was great.
So I know the human that plays the Raptor.
I could tell.
We're friends. And he came up to me before the game wearing the Raptor costume on the floor and started to have a conversation with me. And you can't see his face. His face is in the mouth.
Right. I heard him talking when he came over at the game, and I looked at him, and it was kind of
him
jarring.
Him or her. We don't know.
Right. I assume it was a him, but I couldn't really tell.
And I can't have – I told the person I can't have a conversation with you like this. I just can't talk into a dinosaur's mouth. Anyway, Tim Bontemps just came from Philadelphia Sixers shoot around. I was not fortunate enough to go there. I was doing other stuff. I assume they came clean on everything that's wrong with Markelle Fultz and gave you a detailed a description of what thoracic outlet syndrome.
Yep.
Toss. They
broke it
did
down.
We say toss?
They broke it down.
Did they say anything? How many questions in Brett Brown's scrum were about the same question about Markelle Fultz just worded a different
way? It was actually only one question. And then when he answered, you knew there was no reason to ask any other questions because he just said, yeah, we want to have Markelle back soon. It doesn't really change anything. And then that's it.
It
was so little news that I'm not writing a news story about it. So that's how little news there was.
It's amazing that – so he was diagnosed with this yesterday according to his – or recently according to his agent, attorney, whatever, Brothers.
Raymond Brothers. Agent, attorney. Not just an agent, not just an attorney. Agent, attorney.
Yeah. Who then went out of his way in a follow-up statement released to Woj to say there is nothing mental going on here. We have gotten a physical diagnosis.
Right.
I do not believe that. The Sixers do not believe that.
Right.
Do you believe that?
Here's what I'll say. In talking to people last night, I would say that Raymond certainly went out on a limb, I would say. He made a very strong statement to Adrian, and I hope that he's right. I hope he's right. I think everybody hopes he's right. I don't necessarily think everybody is confident he's right, to put it mildly. And you know, look, do I expect that 6 weeks from now, Markelle is going to look like the guy I watched at Washington who was unbelievable? No, I don't. I really hope so. I really hope this, like, is the problem and it's fixed, because I thought he was a hell of a player in college. And I just, as a human being, I would like him to be past whatever this is. But I mean, it's not, I don't think anybody could rationally look at this situation and say, aha, this has solved it. This is going to fix it. And in 6 weeks, things are going
to
be fine.
So I spent part of the morning talking to what I would call a source familiar with the situation. It's been out in the open now that Fultz has seen over the summer, I believe, saw, over the summer, before this latest round right. of specialists, saw 10, I think is the number.
I believe so.
Of specialists. And nobody found this problem. And now he saw another round before somebody found this problem. The appearance, it's not even just the appearance, but the appearance is that none of these doctors found anything structurally wrong. And it's been communicated to me by these sources that that's essentially what this diagnosis is. One source put it as it is a diagnosis of exclusion, meaning if Markel Fultz reports that he's experiencing pain in this region and a number of doctors cannot find any structural reason why he should be experiencing pain in this region, this is the diagnosis you default to.
Right. Right.
I just don't know what else to do with that. I just don't know.
Honestly, at this point, I don't know what to do with this story entirely.
Like, and Jeff Stotts, who runs In Street Clothes, an absolute must injury.
Yep.
Said it's common among baseball pitchers, which makes sense. He said it's the first basketball player that he's aware of that has ever been diagnosed with this.
Yep.
The sources have also made clear he has no nerve damage. The word damage has been thrown around and people within the team are pushing back saying, no, do not say he has nerve damage. There is no evidence of nerve damage. And, mm-hmm. and the other thing is he's been medically cleared to play by the Sixers up till yesterday.
Right.
And only yesterday when the diagnosis came out, did the Sixers say, okay, now he's not going to play for a while. Definitely not going to play for a while.
Yep.
Because this doctor, whoever it is, said that he recommends rest and rehabilitation and physical therapy.
Right.
And we are going to acquiesce to that.
Right.
I don't think the Sixers would have ever – I don't think the Sixers, absent this diagnosis, would have declared him medically unfit to play. I think he would still be medically cleared right now if it were up to them.
Yeah, I would probably agree. And I think – for the Sixers, this kind of solves a problem anyway, right? Because I was at the game. I mean, I was at the Sixers. I was with the Sixers before and after the Jimmy trade, in the new gig. And, you know, I was at the game when Markel double pumped a free throw in Miami. After the game, I talked to Brett. Brett, you know, talked about the Markel situation with me, you know, once again, reiterated his support for him as a person. And the one thing I will say, I give Philly a lot of credit. With a guy like this, a number one pick who was supposed to be a huge part of the team, it would have been really easy to crush this guy publicly at some point in the last year and a half. And to a man, the entire organization has not done that.
They love him. They say he's a great kid.
Which, I mean, it's like almost cult-like. You talk to everybody there, they say the same thing. Like how great a kid he is. He's an awesome guy. We love him. And I give them a lot of credit for that because it would be easy to pile on him, and they haven't. However, you know, before that game, I asked Brett, hey, what are you going to do when Jimmy shows up on Wednesday? Oh, I know what I'm not going to say. Well, we knew he wasn't going to start Markel anymore. He didn't. And then the next week I was with him again when he played, you know, 7 minutes in the first half against the Suns. The Sixers were terrible in the game. TJ McConnell then plays over him in the second half. They play great. They win the game. TJ's good. And it was clear that day when Brett again had the same kind of answer, like, we're going to figure it out later after the game, that TJ was taking over his spot in the rotation and Markel wasn't going to play. And then all of a sudden, you know, then it's like, well, you know, we're going to go get these tests. We're going to do this stuff.
And yeah. The underlying point of what you're saying being if he's playing 20 minutes a game, is he going to get these
tests? Well, and not even that. Right. Well, yes, exactly. And now, like, it was clear that day, like I wrote after that Miami game that the Sixers are now in a win now mode. And this is a team that can't be waiting around to see how this guy's going to develop. Up until the trade, they could say, hey, we're still figuring this out. We're developing. We got Joel and Ben. They're all young. Now it's like, hey, we got Jimmy Butler. Like, we got to be good right now. And we can't have this guy who is not able to shoot sometimes and, you know, is just a bad fit with Ben. Like, there's all these issues. TJ McConnell's a very good backup point guard that teams would have been interested in trading for. And we got to play him and our team's going to be better. And so now, you know, whatever the injury situation with Markel, now for probably 6 weeks, he's gone and he's out of the picture. And they're just going to have TJ playing, and I think they're going to be a better team for it.
I also want to make this clear. TJ McConnell's turned himself into a hell of an NBA, a good NBA player.
I saw TJ McConnell play for Duquesne against Bonaventure, in like 2010 or something as a freshman before he even transferred to Arizona. I was like, this guy's a nice player in the A-10. And the fact he's gone from that to this is unbelievable.
I didn't see it coming. I'll eat crow on that. I made fun of him in a 10 things column either last season or the season before, and he has turned.
Hell, he won them playoff games last year.
They had to start him.
Right.
He was great. Against Boston, after the confetti game. Or did he start the confetti game?
I think he might have started it.
I think he started that. Were you at that game?
No.
That was a fun game.
I was at Rockets Jazz.
Should have saved that confetti. You were at the
I was end watching of, that game on TV.
You were at the end of Carmelo Anthony.
No, that was Thunder Jazz.
Oh, wait, Thunder Jazz. I got my Carmelo teams mixed up.
Carmelo, 6 months later was the end of Carmelo.
The Jazz ended Carmelo Anthony. when the Jazz are like, we're going to take our entire offense to target you on switches, even if it's like Joe Ingles, maybe, like, it's not a good sign.
Not good. Foreshadowing.
Listeners, you have to admit, when you think of the perfect gift, you probably do not think of an electric toothbrush or really any toothbrush of any kind, but the Quip electric toothbrush is one of the most gift-guided gifts of the season, and here's why. It's perfect for everyone with a mouth, which is everyone, and it's something that they'll use twice a day if they are on point with their dental care. Quip is the gift that keeps refreshing with brush heads that are automatically delivered on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5. You don't have to even think about it. You can even prepay refills for a year as part of your gift to make sure that whoever you give this to is never using old or worn out or ineffective bristles. It's Quip is one of the first electric toothbrushes accepted by the American Dental Association, which seems important, and has thousands of verified 5-star reviews. That's why I love Quip. Quip looks like a big ticket tech gift. I mean, you would think a high-end electric toothbrush would cost hundreds of dollars, but it starts at just $25, that's nothing. And if you go to getquip.com/low right now, you get your first refill pack for free with the purchase of a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/low. Look, I want to be clear on this. There's only one person who knows if Markelle Fultz is in pain, and it's Markelle Fultz. And I am going to believe him if he says that he's in pain. I'm not going to sit here and disbelieve that he's in pain. If he says he's hurt, then he's hurt.
Yeah.
That does not preclude there being a mental element to what is going on here. Drew Hanlon tweeted or said the word yips and then walked it back over the summer as quickly as possible to trainer who he was working with.
Yeah.
Certainly other people have not just floated that theory, come out and said it. And there's,
well, that's why Raymond to me went on such a limb yesterday to Adrian, just like flat out saying it's crazy. People are saying that there is no issue with that. Like, okay, I hope not. I hope this thoracic outlet syndrome is the problem and it's fixed in 6 weeks. But if it's not, then what is your response going to be? You know, I mean, that's why I thought it was, you know, he certainly put himself out there because now all eyes are going to be on him when he comes back again.
And of course, you know, there could be a chicken egg thing. Like, where did he start feeling this pain after something happened in his head, or did the pain cause some? I don't know. I just, you know, I don't believe that it's all one or all the other, but I am going to take Markelle saying I'm in pain at face value.
Here's the more interesting question to me. Does he ever play a game with the Sixers again? Or is he traded before the 6 weeks are over? Because I tend to think, and this is not a source thing, I tend to think he's traded before the 6 weeks are over. Cause I think they need depth on this team. And I think at this point, you have to look at Markelle as a sunk cost for them. And just being around this team, you know, you know, the Philly market well. We're both Northeast guys. Like, that's probably the single worst place to be if you're a guy in a situation like him, where every day, whenever anything happens to Markelle Fultz, it's a headline and a talk radio story. And it's everywhere, whether he pump fakes a free throw, whether he doesn't play in the second half of a game, whether he scores 15 points, anything the guy does, it's a story and a headline every day. And I just don't see how, again, barring him coming back in 6 weeks and just looking like the guy I saw at Washington, I just don't know how it's going to work for him there. I feel like he's got to get traded to someplace like Orlando or Atlanta or Phoenix or someplace where there's no media and he can just play. And then he's just a guy in the league and not number one pick Markelle Fultz, who is having these issues with the Sixers.
Well, and to your sunk cost remark, you know, obviously the problem with trading him before he plays another game is that you are trading him at his all time. He does not get an opportunity to even play one game to show that, okay, I've treated this and I look better.
Well, and the question is it going to change, right?
Right. So, and if you don't think it is, then it doesn't matter.
I mean, I talked to people last week. I mean, I'm sure you've had the same conversations. I mean, I think people around the league generally think they missed their window to trade him this summer because maybe they could have traded him this summer and had his value still at some level. And, you know, now it's back.
They were raving about him in training camp. I mean, they were raving about his defense. We have a chance to be the number one defense in the league with him guarding point guards. He looks great. He's slashing. He's making plays. Yeah, he's not. Then I heard, well, he's not shooting outside shots, but then Elton Brand on my podcast said he's shooting threes in practice.
No, I remember.
Yeah. And so I thought, okay, I guess we're going to see what happens.
Then he went to China, and after one game in China, you know, Brett said, well, he's going to only start the first half of games, you know, and just like immediately started backslide.
It's just an unbelievable situation. And about the headlines, it's like no one has really helped. There's a certain look, if you're the number one pick and they traded the number three pick and another pick to get you, like, you're just going to be a story forever. That is the burden of that. It's not his fault. He didn't ask for that, but that is the burden of it. I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. But no one has done a good enough job, protecting this from becoming an even bigger story. Not the Sixers, not Markel, not Markel's people, because the more it's a mystery, the more it becomes a big story. And they have all made it a mystery. They have all, and everything with the Sixers.
That's the one word you can describe this whole thing as, right?
Well, but the Sixers have done this with every injury. Embiid's injury timeline was incomprehensible.
Yep.
Zaire Smith's sesame allergy was hidden for weeks at a time. It's like the track record.
Ben Simmons when he broke his foot.
And so the more you make it a mystery, the more people are going to dig in and the more it's a story.
Yep. It's all true.
Listeners, you know that I love anything that can save me time. And a few years ago, buying tickets to comedy shows or sporting events or whatever for friends was just getting too time consuming. I would stress about, oh, did I forget to check that site on the secondary market? What about that one? Oh my God, am I getting the best deal possible? All of a sudden, 2 hours will have gone by that I would never get back. SeatGeek solves all of those problems. SeatGeek pulls millions of tickets from the secondary market into one place so you can easily find the seats you want at the price you're willing to pay. They have an easy to use color-coded system, green dots for good deals, red dots for maybe not so good deals. You can tell exactly where your seat is, whether it's obstructed view or anything like that. It's super easy to use. You don't have to worry about going to any other site. It streamlines the entire process into mere minutes. Every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence to anything. They helped me get tickets to Hamilton a couple years ago. I mean, that's a good get. Make SeatGeek your go-to source for everything from sports to concerts to comedy shows, theater. And best of all, my listeners get $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code LOW, L-O-W-E. That's promo code LOW. My last name, the name of this podcast, for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event, and we have the tickets. The actual 76ers play a game tonight in Toronto that we're going to be at.
Yes. Great game. Excited for it.
I am excited for it too. The Raptors are 20-5. They are right now the class of the East. The Sixers are 17-8. With a point differential of a team that's two or three games above 500. They've won all these close games with Jimmy Butler hitting
insane shots.
Going for the win in Brooklyn was
I watched that entire position going, what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? Oh, wait, that's what you're doing. You're making a crazy step back three over Rondae Hollis Jefferson, who was right in your face.
The Raptors are 20-5, with the point differential of an 18-7 team. And they've played one of the easiest schedules in the league.
They're making up for that right now. They're in the middle of quite the stretch.
Yeah, they're in the middle of a tough stretch. They lost to Denver the other night. Do you think they're the best team in the East? How do you compare these two teams? And we'll talk about Milwaukee. I'm not leaving out Milwaukee or Boston or whatever.
I think right now they're the best team in the East. I've watched them play a few times. I was at their game, in Boston a couple weeks ago, a classic game, went to overtime. Was at the Warrior game last week, was at the game obviously with you on Monday. They're really good. They're really deep. Kawhi, whether he's 85% or 90 or 95% of the guy he was before, he's damn close. And he, I think, is probably the best guy in the East right now. And
Giannis will have something to say about that.
I mean, I think Giannis and Embiid both can be in the conversation for that. But Kawhi, when Kawhi is right at both ends, he's unbelievable. And he, even if he's not quite there, you still see him just doing stuff all the time. That's insane. In either way, whether he's there or not, the fact that they have a guy who's at that level, they never had that before. And our guy Pascal Siakam has been unbelievable. Kyle Lowry's averaging, it feels like, 27 assists a game. Even when he's not shooting the ball well, he's still getting 10, 12 assists. You know, they've got depth all over the place. Their bench hasn't even played well. and they're 20-5. I mean, their bench kind of secretly has been pretty awful for much of the year.
They have not had the same.
I mean, they've all been hurt. You know, OG Anunoby's been hurt. Van Vliet's been hurt. Delon Wright has been hurt. Jonas Valanciunas lately has been bad. Those guys think are going to get better. CJ Miles couldn't hit a shot for like 3 weeks, and he was also hurt. So I just look at them, and I think they're the most complete team. And I also think Nick Nurse has done a great job. Like, even some of the lineup stuff he's done, like switching guys in and out, I think that's going to help them down the road too, because a lot of times, you know, you get these teams get in the playoffs, and they play one way all year, and then they start to switch it up in matchups, and like guys can't handle it. And like Toronto's like, all right, well, you know, this is what we've been doing all season.
And it's not just Valanciunas. Valanciunas is essentially a backup now. I mean, they'll spot start him here or there.
Against big guys, yeah. He may start tonight against Joel Embiid.
80% of the games Ibaka is starting. I was talked with Nick a little bit yesterday in his office. He reminded me, like, this is also about OG. OG started all season last year.
Yeah.
You know, or much of the season, and now he's a backup, and like that took some salesmanship too. And players don't like that. That's a hard sell. Both a demotion, obviously, and a game to game difference.
Guys like to have routines.
And to your point, like he didn't do it. I don't even know what day this is. Wednesday. He didn't do it on Monday, but there were a few games in a row where he was putting Kawhi in with the bench to start the second and fourth quarters. I like that. I like playing around with that. That's an interesting idea, but they are the most complete team. They're super duper deep. And I just wonder, like, who do you think is the third best player on the Raptors?
Pascal Siakam. Unless you want to say he's the second best player and Kyle Lowry's the third best player. One or the other, right? I mean, I don't even think it's close at this point.
Ibaka has been very good.
Ibaka's shooting 73% from shots from 15 to 19 feet. I'm not even kidding. I actually looked up the number because I was sitting with you and Blake Murphy the other night, and I turned to Blake and I said, I think Serge Ibaka is literally shooting 75% on these 15-foot elbow jumpers. Cause I've been at probably 8 Raptors games. I don't think he's missed one at a game I've been at. And I went and looked. I think he's literally shooting like 73%.
I asked that question because I think the Raptors internally are beginning to have a very, not even beginning, probably ahead of the, more than that. Are starting to have a very interesting discussion or will have one over the next 2 months, which is, are we all in enough? The Sixers their Sixers' third best player is now Ben Simmons. The Celtics, if they get it together, are going to be dangerous. Do we need to make all this depth is nice. We've seen a lot of times in the playoffs before they're going 11 deep. Don't matter anymore.
Doesn't matter. Nope.
We know that teams are going to test Siakam in the playoffs. They're just not going to guard him.
Yep.
Now they're already doing that. To some degree, and he's fine.
Yeah, Denver did that the other night. I think it was on that last shot by Kawhi Leonard. When Kawhi got to the baseline, they made a ridiculous shot. They just ran away from Pascal and doubled him, basically.
And he's shooting like 34-35% from three.
Right.
And he's really good at just, you don't guard him, he dribbles at you and does like a little baby Greek thing move, where he spins. Right. He can spin both ways. I loved yesterday, he said, you can't scout me. I don't care if my spin moves in the scouting report. You can't scout it. Can't do anything about it. I wonder if they will make one more move at some point. And I don't know who it would be, but they are definitely afraid of, we're a bottom five defensive rebounding team. We're a terrible defensive rebounding team with Serge at center.
And if you're playing Pascal and Serge at the 4 and 5, that's not going to do a lot for that.
And they are afraid of that point A, point B. Are we going to run into a matchup in the playoffs where Valanciunas can't play?
There's no chance he plays in high level playoff games. Well, he got destroyed by the Warriors. He got destroyed by the Grizzlies. He got destroyed by the Nuggets.
And if
he plays against any good team with any kind of space big, he's got no shot. Maybe he can bang against Embiid, but like if they're playing Boston, he can't guard Al Horford. He can maybe match up with Aaron Baines for a few minutes, but like he can't guard those guys.
Al Horford needs to be better, first of all. That's something that...
Yes, that's been a sneaky problem for them. I kind of wonder if his knee is more of an issue than anybody.
I just thought, you know, when they played the Jazz a couple weeks ago in Utah, he has always given Gobert fits. Gobert has not been able to be on the floor with Al, and he kept up fine. Al just kind of would catch, and Gobert would be 10 feet away. I'm not going to shoot this.
Al played great again. The last game I saw for the Celtics was in New Orleans last week, and Al was awesome. Even though Anthony Davis had like 28 and 16 in that game, Al was really good in that game. It was probably the best game he's played all season. And I think that was a positive sign for them because he has, you know, for all the other issues Boston has had, his play has been a sneaky one.
I just wonder with Kawhi.
I guess the issue to go, I wanted to ask you though, to go back to your question, about whether they're going to make a move. I kind of wondered if maybe they would ever get in the Jimmy sweepstakes at some point. Cause I thought he might've been an interesting fit. But what is the move for them?
That's what I was,
I'm not sure what it is.
I was thinking last night, I was trying to go through, you know, could they get a backup center that's a better fit? Could they get a Favors? But I just don't see it's going to be hard. They also owe their pick this year to the Spurs, which is
right.
Fine. They can trade another pick.
Right.
I just wonder with Kawhi looming, does that make them more likely to do something or less likely to do something?
I just think it's tough with their team because they don't, like, again, like you said, you're like potentially trading for a backup big, right? Like that's kind of what you're looking at. And I mean, maybe they can swing a deal like that. I tend to think that their solution to the Valanciunas problem is in the playoffs. They're just going to play OG a lot more and Siakam is going to play center.
Well, that I was going to say, because that lineup has been, I believe the lineup of Lowry, Green, Anunoby, Leonard, Siakam. Now, I've not checked in 3 or 4 days. I believe it's played 4 minutes over 2 games.
Hasn't played much at all.
And that's, I don't remember what game they used it in the fourth quarter, and I believe they lost, and it did not do well. I remember thinking, I'm glad Nick is trying this, because this is,
I think it might have been that Boston game. Maybe.
You know that they have that in the bag. And it
feels like that, if for this team to reach their potential, that lineup has to be really good, in my opinion. Because that to me has the chance to be a really special lineup. And like OG has not been great. And I'm curious, you know, people compare Pascal to Draymond, and I think it's probably just in terms of his skill set the best fit. But Draymond, as you know, is a thick, stocky guy who can guard centers. And Pascal is not that. And I'm not sure, you know, if he tried to guard Joel Embiid, that's tough, you know, if you're in a playoff series like that. And I'd be curious to see. You know, and there aren't a lot of centers like Joel either, obviously, but how he does against size will be interesting because he isn't the same, you know, body type as Draymond or one of those other guys.
Yeah. I just think it's a card they're going to play at some point, and I think it's interesting.
They have to.
I just think it's interesting that Nick has not really played it yet.
They're clearly already, he's doing a lot of experimenting for later already. And, you know, that's the thing I've been most impressed with him. He is a nice JetBlue socks.
You guys are gonna have to share a microphone.
Rachel can take over the mic. He is a
Rachel
he is
just
a,
walked into the room. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, friends. Let's let Tim finish.
And no, just he. I've just people. Been. I've just been really. I've just. I've just really. No, it's fine. I've just been really impressed with Nick as a rookie coach. Like you said before, getting all these guys to buy in is hard.
Can you imagine if you called Nick a rookie coach to his face, he wouldn't say anything? Can you imagine if you called David Blatt a rookie coach to his face?
I'll tell you what, I was in person when people called David Blatt a rookie coach and he did not like it very much, to put it mildly.
Can I explain why I've interrupted your podcast yet?
I asked you to.
Okay. So did you start off by saying what this podcast was supposed to be, or is it only when I'm on do you reveal?
No, there was a guest that canceled. There was a guest that canceled.
So that was the backup plan.
Tim is sitting in the Rachel Nichols Memorial. Exactly.
Because I am never booked as the primary guest. I'm always.
Untrue.
Always the someone canceled backup guest. That was one of the most fun, I think.
Now we're teammates in that. Me and you.
Woohoo. And I'm in the hotel room literally. Below you, I have just found out.
You're 20.
Do not give out my hotel room number on your pod.
We don't know what hotel we're in.
That means
that's true.
Lord knows what you're going to be up to tonight, dancing, or I don't know what you're doing.
I'm going to be up to tonight?
But
I'm going to come home and sleep.
Well, I will hear you. So if you do anything, I don't know, what, have a party? I don't want to like get into speculating any more than that. If you host a rager or a camper,
we have other friends that would be more likely to host a party than Zach.
Well, that might be true. That might be true. I'm just saying, if there's a kegger in this room, I'm going to know about it.
8 o'clock tip and morning flight equals cranky Zach.
And can we explain also that since Zach was like, oh, you should stop by, I was coming all the way from one whole floor down in the hotel. So I figured, why put on shoes? I'm in my socks.
Got your fancy
and
JetBlue socks.
I was going to say, I told the guys I have fancy JetBlue socks from some like red eye flight that I took whenever. And that's what I found in the bottom of my suitcase. So there you go. JetBlue. There you go.
I go down to the lobby of our building in my socks to pick up a package.
Yes.
And my wife is like, you need to put on shoes. And I'm like, why? Where am I going? I'm going now. I also have gotten all the way to the front door of my building because there's a coffee shop at the bottom of my building that you have to go outside. You have to do a quick U-turn outside.
To get it, yeah.
And I have realized one step out the door that I'm in my slippers and that
I think that's fine.
One time I went for it. One time I was like, you know what? I'm just not going
to
go back.
So the only issue with that is, do you want the bottom of the slippers to hit like New York concrete and then bring back into your home and your bedroom?
I am not one of these germaphobes.
I mean, look, I'm not, but I would have expected you to be.
Like, but when my wife and I stay at hotels on vacation or when she comes with me on a trip, she thinks hotels are disgusting. Like, the first thing that goes is the cover. Like, I just never thought of this.
She thinks
hotel carpets are disgusting.
They've done studies on this. The remote is apparently the thing that you should try not to touch.
Well, you know me, I can't
get away from that.
I can't decompose.
We work for Disney. I've only been here a month. I might get fired. Let's just stay away from that.
I can't decompress on a game night without half an hour of television, no matter what time I get home.
I think germs are fine, but that if you are,
I think germs are fine. There's a line.
If you're someone who cares about such things, the travel magazines will tell you, take, you know, a hand towel washcloth and just wipe it over the remote before you touch it. That's all.
Information for life.
Exactly. News you can use, so to speak.
That's right.
You know, Zach, you were a topic of conversation this morning.
Oh, great. That's always fantastic.
The woman in the hair and makeup department would like to give you a haircut.
I need a haircut. I should have got one before I came here.
One of the people who works with us said, oh, I wish we could just cut Zach's hair.
So does my wife. I'm too lazy though.
The Raptors have a barber in their facility.
Everyone does now. It's the thing. It's one of the things you got. Who has the one in the arena? Oh, the Hawks put one in the arena.
The Hawks have one in the arena for the fans. Yeah. Yeah.
Listeners, a 23andMe DNA kit is the perfect gift for everyone you love. There's never been a better way to give the gift of genetic discovery. How about that? To your parents, your siblings, aunts, uncles, grandparents, anyone else. It's the one gift you can buy the entire family that will be unique for each loved one. With 23andMe's Ancestry Composition Report, you can explore where your DNA is from out of over 150 regions worldwide. You can explore the genetics behind your appearance, your senses, your tastes, all that stuff. And now through December 25th, that's Christmas, get 30% off any 23andMe kit. All you have to do is order your DNA kit at 23andme.com/low. My last name, the name of this podcast, L-O-W-E. That's the number 23andme.com/low. Again, that's 23andme.com/low. How was your conversation with Kyle yesterday?
I mean, you guys have seen, I assume everyone's sort of seen it by now.
I've seen clips.
It was, you know.
Kyle Lowry, to be clear.
Yes, exactly. Kyle Smith. Kyle Jones. Yeah, I mean, look, I thought it was interesting. Everyone in this room, I think, has talked to Kyle a lot over the years, and he's the kind of guy who, if he's comfortable with you, is very candid. I find him super smart to talk to. I think he's great at delivering nuance, which not everyone is in one of those interview setups. So when we were talking about the DeMar DeRozan trade, he both talked about, first of all, just the detail of sitting on the edge of his bathtub at 2:30 in the morning that DeMar called him, which is how he found out about it. And, you know, he has Do Not Disturb on his phone, but for people in his favorites, right, you can get through if you keep calling. So his phone starts ringing off the hook at 2:30 in the morning. His young child was in the bed with them because he snuck into the bed in the middle of the night, and he's like being woken up by a phone, and all of a sudden he's got his like little, you know, toddler on top of him, and the phone's ringing, and he's like, what is going on? It's DeMar. So he kind of like edges, he says, over to like out of the bed to not disturb the rest of his family and into the bathroom where he sits on the edge of the tub. And gets delivered the news from DeMar, who's sitting in a Jack in the Box parking lot where he has found out that he has been traded, and sort of going through the betrayal that he said they both felt in that moment. But he also had some real nuance in our conversation talking about he does understand the business aspect of that, and that people who say, oh, players got to know it's a business. Like, players know it's a business, and that it can be something that they get both sides of it, and it's still complicated. So I thought that was really interesting.
That being said, what did he say about The guy who runs the team.
Well, that was my next thing. But I wanted to.
Just setting you off.
I was going to say, but I do think, I mean, this is something, in fact, we've talked about this on the gym. I think it's something that we don't really quite, I think there's so much room, there's so much of a rush to assign blame. Like, you know, were the Raptors or Masai Ujiri being reasonable or not? Should they have done that? You know, did they upgrade? They upgraded the team and it's a business and you got to do it. Or on the other side with a guy like Jimmy Butler or Kawhi Leonard who wants a trade and sort of, you know, should he have done that? Is that okay? And the bottom line is it's never going to be one or the other. It is always going to be complicated. There are always multifacets to this. It is a family because you have to be connected and play like brothers to win a title. You cannot win a title if you are not connected like that. But it's also a business. Both things are true, and that creates an inherent conflict. And then that gets to what Tim, you were referring to, is that at the end of the interview, I asked him, I was just very open, and I said, how would you define your relationship with Masai Ujiri? And I can pull up the – I don't want to misquote him. I can pull up the exact quote, but he basically said he's president of the team and I am – he's the president of the basketball operations and that's it. He does his job. I do my job. That's where we stand.
And I think that sums up that, you know, there's still a lot of hard feelings there on, you know, and I think some of that probably goes back to the fact that, you know, Kyle's name has come up plenty in these talks too. And I think if, you know, there was a way to move him at some point, he very well could have been moved also.
Hey, it's like, as you said, it's always messy. And, it's, as long as it's legal, it's okay. Like, I think the answer is it's okay. What Kawhi and Jimmy Butler did, it's okay. What Masai did is okay. It's all part of the business. It's not illegal. It's not against the collective bargaining agreement. It's all okay. There are nuances to that, but I don't begrudge anybody for making their team better or making a life choice that's within the rules. Now, there are ways to handle it that are maybe nicer and smoother than other ways, but at the end of the day, it's all allowable and no one else in whatever field you're in, no one else is looking out for you except you. It doesn't matter what anyone said. No one else is looking out for Jimmy Butler except his family, his agent, and him. That's it. Like, Minnesota Timberwolves are not looking out for him. The Sixers are not looking out for him at the end of the day. Only he is. And no one's looking out for Masai Ujiri except for him. That's it. And if he thinks this team needs to try to make a push for a title, then I'm sorry, DeMar. Like, you know, you never quite got over the playoff hump individually or as a team, and this dude almost won the MVP 2 years ago. He's just better. He's a better player.
I think it's so interesting because that's an incredibly clear-eyed view, and yet that's not the normally.
Well, I don't live it. I it's easy for me to be clear-eyed.
Well, right. But I mean, it's not normally how we feel about this stuff. It's all through the lens of he's being a diva or they're being disloyal or any of that stuff. And I guess what I'm always sort of focused or drilling down on is the system is set up for hard feelings.
There's no room for emotion in big business.
Well, no,
this is big business.
But I would say it's the other way around. I would say it's set up to create this emotion.
Oh, I agree. I just mean to Zach's point, like at the end of the day, whether it's Jimmy or whether it's Masai, at the end of the day, you got to be out for yourself.
But I just think it's set up like these kinds of sort of emotional conflicts and all, you know, like the way Kyle feels right now or the way DeMar felt or the way Tom Thibodeau felt about Jimmy Butler when he stormed into that practice. Any of that, it is set up for that because we are in a system where you are both supposed to be super close to people in order to win. And it's supposed to be a business where everyone can ask for a trade, get traded, any of that stuff. And that is going to create these kinds of situations.
That's why The Jump is a hit show.
I want to do the
NBA is a nonstop entertainment factor.
That's too much. I want to do rapid fire through a few teams that might qualify as surprising in one direction or the other.
And let's do it.
And DeMar transitions us perfectly into San Antonio being 11-13. It's cool to say 14th in the West. That sounds very dramatic. They could be 9th in like 48 hours. That's how crazy the West is. But they are 14th. They are 29th in defense, points allowed per possession.
Not ideal.
29th. I believe they are ahead of only the Cavs, who are not good.
They're almost not an NBA team.
A bad basketball team.
Teams that are, when you're only ahead of teams that are trying to play as poorly as possible, then.
And it's close. The Cavs are 113.5 points allowed per 100. Spurs are 113.3.
Again, not great.
Did you see Tim Reynolds, our friend from the Associated Press, tweet? The Spurs lost by more than 30 points 5 times in Greg Popovich's first 1,700 regular season games. It's happened 3 times in the last 4 years. That's a striking way to look at it.
Again, not great.
They beat who was the one win against? I saw the game and I forgot. They beat someone. They beat
that, I believe that game was the Chicago Bulls in the infamous Zach LaVine saying, "I'm good, coach. Keep Wendell over there. I'm going to shoot my three." I think that was the one win they've had in the last 10.
We're going to go back to Hoiberg when I bring up the next team. But I picked the Spurs to miss the playoffs, so I can't say I'm surprised. The DeJounte Murray injury is obviously hurting them. I just think that
Keller.
Just big picture, they made a decision when they traded Kawhi that we are going to go for the best current player that we can get. And I didn't like that decision at the time.
How much of that was about Greg Popovich staying on as coach?
Well, Greg, he's the number one decision maker in the organization. Also, of it. And I just think long term that was the wrong choice. But this team, you know, I know everyone used the logic of, well, they won whatever 47, whatever it was, without Kawhi last year, and they're getting DeMar, so why wouldn't they win that many again? I just think people slept on Kyle Anderson and Danny Green as important defensive players and just guys who they just fit in.
Well, by the way, Danny Green getting healthy and being here has been huge for the Raptors.
The Spurs just didn't value Danny Green, and I never understood it. They never valued him. They actively wanted to get off his salary as if he were Pau Gasol or something in this trade. And I even argued with some other people. I was like, I just like Danny Green. I understand, like, he only averages 9 points a game or whatever. Like, he's good. Like, he's a good NBA player.
He's been an essential piece for these guys.
He can be on the floor in the NBA finals, even now, where he's 85 to 90% of what he was when he made like 9,000 threes in the 2013 right. finals. Right. He's just a good NBA player. And I just don't like, they have a bunch of little guards and a bunch of guys who are used to be threes and are now fours in the NBA. They don't really have wings. Like, if you're trying to play Quincy Pondexter because you need some wings, like, that's not good.
They've had injury problems this year.
Yeah, they've had that. Murray can guard wings, so he's sort of an honorary.
The Murray injury was a real killer. Like, they really were you don't hear the Spurs brag about stuff, and like, they were like really fired up about where.
No, I was too. He was one of my six most intriguing players for the season. All their coaches were like, he is hitting these jump shots in practice. Yeah.
I don't have six most intriguing players for the season.
Zach's got six most intriguing everything.
Everything.
No, that's one of my annual preseason columns.
There was a conversation before you got here about the fact that the TD Gardens is might be the only team in the league that doesn't have their actual name on the court. Zach's on top of all the
anything
details.
On the court. Oh, have you guys talked? You are the two most qualified people to talk about this. Have we talked about what Brooklyn has done to its court and why they took the subway tiles
off? I wrote 10 things on it.
Like, what? What?
I hammered
why?
Them. I hammered them in a column and said, this is the stupidest thing.
Like, I'm upset about this. And we have a former Brooklyn Nets writer and a court specialist right here on this
New Yorker.
Podcast.
A New Yorker. Yorker.
True.
It is bizarre. It was like, it was so good. And they took it off for something so generic and I didn't understand.
So I wrote that. I wrote like, so you had a wonderful thing that everybody loved and was totally unique to your team. And someone came into a room and was like, you know what we should do? We should change that and just put some white letters.
Bad.
Just put some white letters. Let's just like make it way worse.
Make it bad.
And other people in the room were like, okay.
Did they come back to you with a panic explanation?
No. I heard it went very high up in the organization.
Oh, I know where it went to.
Yeah. I heard it went very high up.
Zach speaks and it's like, boom.
Yeah.
And that's right. I've had several disgruntled employees approach me at games and be like, thank you for writing that. We hate it. And I'm like, well, someone should have spoken up when you traded nine first round picks.
It's a question I plan to ask the next time I'm in Brooklyn, which I haven't been lately.
I just want to tell you.
So one place I haven't been.
That Zach's place, that, you know, I had after the Mark Cuban interview, I had several women sort of within the Dallas Mavericks organization come to me and say, oh, it meant a lot that, you know, someone asked him tough questions. These are questions we've been wanting to ask for a while. And I like that you go to Brooklyn and they're like, man, it means a lot that somebody asked about the court.
I think you're making fun of me.
I mean.
I was going to say a nice thing. I was going to say a nice thing about you just now, and now I'm not going to.
No. Well, I was going to say, I'm going to leave you to your podcast as now that I've come and interrupted it and stirred up
can
trouble.
Can I say the text you got that day that you showed me?
Oh, you can if you want.
When the day of that Cuban interview, someone from the Mavs texted you a photo of everyone in the Mavs, I guess it was the business said, mostly women. Watching the interview together. And I thought that was really cool. The photo was really cool. That's a keeper. That's a keep on your phone.
No, that was cool. Well, I'm going to go to a much later topic that when you just talked about being 14th in the West and what that means and whatever, our researcher at The Jump, Michael Schwartz, who you've run into when you've done the show.
Big Suns fan.
Is a huge Suns fan and tweeted out last night. He goes, look, you've got to understand the Suns have had a really tough schedule. They don't get to play themselves.
Well, that's the toughest schedule in the league is the worst team in the West by default. You have the toughest schedule in the league. Boom.
There you go. So me and my JetBlue Sox are going back to the floor, to the room right below to get my stuff to go to the arena.
I was going
to
say, you got to for the hit show.
So if there's a kegger here tonight, I'm going to tell all of the world on Twitter. So Zach, well,
there is, you'll be invited.
I wasn't the backup guest. It's Tim. I used to be your backup guest. Now I'm not your backup guest.
Even though
you're
very mean. I'll see you on the Jump shortly.
Have a good show.
Tim, anything else on the Spurs before I pop us onto another team?
No, I mean, I guess to your point, I think, like you said, Danny Green and Kyle Anderson losses are both, I think, have been underrated. Both of those guys are good, solid players. Danny Green being hurt last year, you know, like another, you know, speaking of the Spurs, another like revelation, like, oh, after the year, by the way, I had this groin injury all year that was misdiagnosed, just kind of casually said it on a podcast in August. You know, but yeah, if they're playing Bryn Forbes at point guard. Like they're just, their team is just not good.
They were the number one item in my 10 things column last week because their shot selection at the time, they were last in 3-point shots and second to last in shots at the rim and first in mid-range shots by such a comical margin that it almost seemed
like a typo.
What's
the opposite of Moneyball? Pennyball?
So, and I said in the column, I said, it's one thing to coach to your personnel. It's another thing to suffer from organizational obstinance. And it's not just the first thing that's going on at San Antonio. And I got a lot of pushback from people saying, well, how dare you criticize Greg Popovich? How dare you? I'm like, first of all, I'm sorry that the math is what it is. Like you just can't win a lot of games in the NBA if you're eighth at the rim and 30th from three, you can be the Pacers. You can win a lot of games. You can't be last.
Right.
If you're last in both and you don't get to the foul line a lot and you don't really offensive rebound a lot, you're starting every game down 10-0. Yeah. Like it's just close to the Celtics.
This is close to the Celtics conversation too. But yeah, no, but it's worse. The math just doesn't. No, it's way worse because Celtics can shoot three.
And so if people are starting to criticize Brad Stevens for that, people criticize Phil Jackson or everything. And it's not just the coaching. It's the type of players that they have targeted.
If you build your team around DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge.
And Rudy Gay. And on and on.
It's hard to win in today's league.
It's a 48.
Especially when your defense isn't good. If your defense is really good, you can maybe squeak out wins, but their defense is not good.
It's a 48-minute game. So all of these things like, you know, your expected points per shot are this much greater for a three. Like those are extrapolated over thousands of shots of sample size. Like an NBA game isn't that. It's 48 minutes. There are many, many ways to win a 48-minute basketball game, even if you start every game with a slight mathematical disadvantage.
Yep.
It's just reality. If you're last at the rim and last from three, you are starting at a mathematical disadvantage that you should probably organize your team to not have built into it. Yeah. End of Spurs discussion. You know who I want to talk about in the Western Conference, Tim Bontemps, real quickly? The 12-10 Dallas Mavericks.
Dallas is good. Period.
You're sold.
Watched them in person against the Celtics last week. They look like the better team. I was very loudly last year on the Luka Doncic is going to be awesome train, and it's insane for him not to be the number one pick. I feel very good about that right now. He is a huge personality who's even better on the court, and you can see already the shift he's had there and just the impact he's had on that team. And look, I talked before about how Toronto's bench is bad. Dallas's bench is out of control. JJ Barea has been unbelievable. They've got Maxi Kleber has got insane.
He had another chase down block last night.
Another chase down block last night. His net rating
is plus
15.
I think he might have got Stauskas. He got someone where it was like, where now he's reached the point where you, like Stauskas was going up and you could see it,
you could see it coming.
Like, oh, you don't challenge Maxi Kleber at the rim.
Well, he did the game blouses thing last night too from the,
he hung on the rim.
Hung on the rim and pointed to the bench. I mean, it's just, they're fun to watch. They fly up and down. Rick Carlisle, you know, talk about guys who are always, you know, you talk about obstinance with Spurs, the Mavs, they're constantly trying weird things, playing 3-point guards together, you know, random lineups. You know, Carlisle's getting every possible bit he can out of that team, and they're good. Like, I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs, but they're a good, solid team that's 10 deep, that's going to play hard every night, and it's going to be really hard.
10 deep, and by the way, someone's coming back pretty soon. And it's guy number 11, and it's the greatest player in the history of the franchise by a lot.
I'm not sure how much he's going to play.
I was going to say there is a universe in which that's not as good of a thing for the Mavericks as we would like to hope.
I mean, the only, and the thing is, like, I don't, he won't care. Like, Dirk is the greatest human on top of being an incredible player, and he'll probably be happy to hang out and have a bit piece here and there. But I don't know how much he's going to play. Who are you going to put him in over?
So I got to say, I didn't think they were going to be a playoff team. If you would have set the over under for me at 35.5, I probably would have taken the under.
I thought they were going to be bad.
Yeah, I dismissed them as a playoff team.
As good as I thought Luka was going to be, I just thought they had too many holes.
Luka's
great.
Luka's good. I think that they have come to faster than I expected. Some things are happening. Number one, Doncic and Smith are starting to coexist in a way that makes some sense.
Yeah.
And Dennis Smith has perked up lately, and I think he's been a very damaging NBA player for most of his very brief career, as most young guards are.
Yeah.
He's shooting 36% from three. And again, he gets to run his pick and rolls. He gets to run some stuff, but they're running him off those little loop Iverson cuts where he runs across the foul line, catches it on the move, and they're learning how to play off of each other. And Harrison Barnes, last season, 10 isolations per 100 possessions. This season, 5. So they're blending him in. Now, you never want to say about a max contract guy is better off being blended in, but he is.
No, he is.
Like, we're not seeing the 15 times in a row give it to Harrison Barnes at the nail and let him control game.
And that's where Luka's the difference, right? If you have a guy like Luka who can be the hub of your offense, even as a rookie, then you can have Harrison Barnes slot in. And you can have Dennis Smith slot in behind him, right? And you could pick your spots with those guys, as opposed to, we need to run our offense through the rookie point guard who's a typical rookie point guard, unlike Luka, and we have to run our offense through Harrison Barnes, who is a third or fourth option who we have to have take a billion shots, right? Like, that's, to your point, that's a team that wins whatever they won last year, 30 games or 27 games or whatever. This team has a chance to win a lot more than that because they make sense.
I believe they're 10th in offense and 12th in defense, or the other way around. So they're on the edge of being in the top 10 on both sides of the ball.
They're 11th on NBA.com in defense. I got it right here. So I was looking up something else. So I'm checking it quick. And they are, what are they? It looks like they're a little lower from there. Their ratings are a little different, but yeah, they're about like 14th.
Are you on the media site or the, see, the media site doesn't count the possessions. You know how the NBA
just works better on my phone, so I use that one.
The NBA's site now counts possessions, so that's the only thing. I stopped using the media site as much as I love it and as much as I miss it. Dallas has had the second easiest schedule in the West behind Oklahoma City, so there are some tests coming.
They'll probably miss the playoffs, but they're going to be tough.
I would still pick them to miss the playoffs.
Yeah, but they're an example. I mean, Sacramento's another example. Like, these teams that were going to be bad in the West are not bad.
No, the West is tough. The West is 14 teams in Phoenix.
Yes.
Is there anyone that's even in the Rookie of the Year race? Can you even make a case for
it? Should it be? I mean, some people have named other people. Like, Jaren Jackson's playing well in Memphis.
Oh, that's a good one.
I mean, but he's not. And that's not a knock on Jaren Jackson. I think he's awesome. I mean, Wendell Carter's been really good for the Bulls.
Jaren Jackson's been better.
No, I agree. But, like, those guys have been good. But to me, it's open and shut.
Yeah, I'm looking at the draft class now. I don't see any. I mean, you can make a numbers case for Ayton, but,
worse than those other three guys by 20, a good amount.
Too. Yeah, 4-20 or whatever they're going to be. I would probably put Jaren Jackson second. I love Jaren Jackson.
He's really good. I saw him last week too in Memphis. He's really, really good.
You know who I've really enjoyed? Aaron Holiday. The 167 minutes Aaron Holiday has played. Sometimes you see a guy and just immediately it's clear that physically he is an NBA player.
Oh, and he was like that in college.
See,
I watched him in person play against Bonaventure in Dayton. Bonaventure win in the tournament, which was nice. But, he looked like an NBA player in college. Like,
come in here bragging about your alma mater winning.
Well, listen, I had a scout text me the other day and say, our team is out 2-0 with our senior forward back. And I said, yeah, well, we've lost like 8 in a row without him before that. So Dartmouth probably has a better record than Bonaventure right now.
Yeah, I'm sure we've played some really, really tough preseason schedule.
You get swag from Dartmouth and I don't from Bonaventure. So that's a win for you.
Yeah. Well, we don't got a lot of basketball. On the Mavericks, last thing. So I wrote this whole column on Hoiberg getting fired. And the bulk of the column was like, how the hell was he supposed to coach this team that, that grasps in wildly different directions every season and puts together teams that make no sense?
It was a very wise point.
And I believe that, like, if you apportion blame for why the Bulls suck, I don't think Fred Hoiberg is in the top two reasons of why the Bulls suck.
No.
Although it's wonderful to see Markkanen back. I'm very excited to watch him.
As you said accurately in your column, you could sum the Bulls up in one sentence. Fred Hoiberg never had a chance to succeed because he never had a roster that fit the way he was supposed to coach.
Someone with – no, I don't think Fred Hoiberg did a good job. Like, I don't think there's any evidence he did a good job. And the someone in the league texted me and said, you know, the rebuttal to that is Rick Carlisle. And that you just put all these misfits on his team every year. Now, well, they've had some down years lately, though.
Right. But the difference is, I think you would argue that Rick Carlisle is one of the few coaches in the league that's value-added, right? There's a few guys that are value-added. There's a few guys historically that are value-negative. And then there's most of the guys are about the same. And if they have really good talent, they're going to be really good. And if they don't, they're really bad. And Fred's probably in the middle. Like, you could look at things in Chicago that were positive. Certain guys developed. They made strides in different areas. But I think you could safely say you look at him and he's not going to be, you know, Greg Popovich or Rick Carlisle or one of these guys that's a real true difference maker. But he also never had a chance. Like, he, you know, as you said well in your column, he was brought in as we're going to move the ball and pace and space and shoot the ball. And the first 2 years he had two guards that couldn't shoot. And then three guards really couldn't shoot. And then the last 2 years they've had a rebuilding young team. And this year he got fired before he had any of them healthy.
If you want some good high comedy to get through your afternoon, the Bulls played a lot of the second half yesterday, or a good portion of it, with a two man front court of Jabari and Lauri Markkanen. So Markkanen at center. Just if you want some good comedy, watch Jabari.
I'll have to wait till I get back to the States to check that out.
Watch him quote unquote box out Domantas Sabonis in the second. It didn't go, spoiler alert, it went poorly.
Didn't go
Jabari
well.
Parker.
I guess Jabari doesn't play defense or box out.
As Russillo said this week on the BS report, Jabari told on himself. No one can argue the dude is trying on defense when he came out and said, they don't pay me to play defense. I want to talk about one more team for 5 minutes.
Sure.
Because we have to talk about them. The saddest franchise in the NBA over the last 6 or 7 years. Nobody cares. Nobody writes about them. Nobody talks about them. It's time to talk about them. The 12-12 Orlando Magic, fresh off another W last night over Miami.
Yep.
By the way, Miami, everybody makes fun of Charlotte and Detroit. And you know, pick your team that is looks to be mired in long-term mediocrity. The Heat are 9-14. Now, I understand
as our pal Brian Windhorst wrote in his column today, maybe it went up last night, Dion Waiters was signed apparently with an ankle injury they knew about and has basically never played since. That's just one of like 87 issues that the Heat currently
have. The Heat are 9-14 with a first round pick out the window unprotected in 2021 and a cap sheet that is horrific. I'm not sure how many teams have bleaker outlooks than Miami.
It's not pretty. It's not
anyway,
pretty.
What has surprised you about Orlando?
Nick Vucevic.
Oh, the big fella.
He's been unbelievable. And I mean, look, you watch them. They played the Warriors. They nearly beat them. He destroyed JaVale McGee and the Lakers. Hopefully
another
people
guy who does not box anybody out.
People could maybe stop trying to argue that JaVale is
he's been fine for what he is for the Lakers. All I'm saying is he doesn't box anybody out.
Correct. There's a reason why Tyson Chandler showed up and they immediately started A, winning more games, and B, playing JaVale less. You know, like, that was not going to work long term. He's been fine in the role he's in. However, that's an aside. Nick Vucevic has been awesome. He's played really well. He's been better on defense than he was in the past. And look, I mean, Frank Vogel's a good coach. I don't think this is necessary. I think that team was kind of a mess. But Steve Clifford is just a solid, really good coach that is going to have his team prepared to play a certain way, and that's what they're going to do. They're not going to turn the ball over. They're going to get good shots. And, you know, you saw it in Charlotte every year. That team always had a point differential better than the record. And, you know, Charlotte, just as you wrote in the Kemba thing, they had just a historically bad stretch in close games. But, you know, this Magic team is interesting. Aaron Gordon is interesting. They've got the two young guys that are interesting, you know, Jonathan Isaac and Mo Bamba. The transition to how much they play is going to be interesting to see. But they probably needed to be bad this year and get one more good young player. But I think they might be good enough that it's going to make that hard.
their offense is turning around is the biggest factor in them being 500. They're 14th in offense since the start of November, which for them is a minor miracle. They've been a terrible offensive team almost continuously for 5 or 6 years.
Yep.
The only thing that worries you is they're, as they were last year, they're 100% dependent on shooting well. They get no free throws. They don't get offensive rebounds. They don't get turnovers. They don't get transition chances. They're 100% dependent on we've got to shoot well in the half court. Yep. And you know, we'll see how long in that. They're fourth in that since November 1, they're fourth in effective field goal percentage. So that's carrying them completely on offense.
Right.
They've also they've settled in to a rotation that makes sense. I think they're starting what is maybe their best lineup with Simmons and Fournier on the wings. They've stopped trying to play Bamba and Vucevic together, which was a disaster.
Right.
And Isaac quietly is starting to play pretty well. I think he's shooting a respectable percentage from three. Here's a number that is, this is a lineup I check once every week or so. Isaac, Gordon, Vucevic all together. So super big with Aaron Gordon as the three, basically. For the season, they're plus 48, 112 points per possession, 99 points allowed per possession. Now, they were plus 27 alone last night against Miami, so that's over half their plus. Right.
But still.
But that lineup, that's the version of the Ibaka, Gordon, Vucevic lineup that failed so horribly.
Yep.
If that proves playable, that's interesting.
Very interesting. Very interesting. No, I mean, they're an interesting team, and, you know, they are kind of in this weird middle ground because they've got guys like Vucevic and Gordon and Fournier, right? Like solid, good NBA players.
Guys who, by the way, Fournier and Simmons have had bad shooting seasons. They're not, Vucevic is really the only guy you can look at and say, well, he's outperforming what we would expect by like some sort of huge margin.
Yep. No question. I mean, they're in an interesting spot. I mean, they clearly don't have a point guard still. DJ Augustin's been, you know, whatever. He's been DJ Augustin. He's been fine, but that's not a guy you look at as a quality NBA starter by any means. I guess I'm just curious as to what I just wonder what the future is for them. Because let's say they make the playoffs, right, as an 8 seed, or a 7 seed in the East, you know, and they get a mid first round pick, I'm just not sure where they're going. And I'm kind of curious what the next step is. John Hammond and Jeff Weltman have a very long track record of going after long athletic guys.
You can say long, no pun intended.
Right. Right. And, you know, Isaac and, Bamba certainly fit in that category, but like Vucevic is a free agent, right? So do they re-sign him? What do they do with Aaron Gordon? That to me felt like a contract from the beginning that was assigned to eventually trade him. They have Fournier that's under contract. I'm just curious what direction they go in because they are kind of in a weird middle ground to me. Where, like I said, I think they probably would have been better off just being awful one more year. And, you know, now they might kind of be stuck in a middle ground. I'm just curious.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I think they would have been fine being awful. I also think they're fine trying to get the 8th seed. Their fans are starved for
something. Well, they definitely are ready to win some games.
Yeah, organizationally, they're fine. I think, John Hammond and Jeff Weltman, they're not going to say necessarily what they really believe on the record, but right. I bet they'd be okay with an 8th seed because it would mean their players are playing pretty well.
Yes.
And that's the thing with Gordon. Like, I agree with you, that contract, which declines every year, is structured to be a trade asset. But I also really do think, like, if he becomes a really good player, like, they're cool keeping him and just figuring it out with Isaac and Vucevic and Bamba and whatever. Like, I think they're even cool keeping Vucevic. Like, I don't think they're in a rush to trade him.
Well, if he plays like this, he's going to be an all-star, and you might have to look at it.
Because there are worse things in the world than having a good starting center while Mo Bamba, like, puts on some weight and learns how to play in the NBA. Like, I think all of these outcomes are okay for them, and I think – it's so easy to get sucked into like, well, we got to get one of the Duke guys, or and we don't have one. We've tanked all these years and we don't have a guy like that. Well, okay. That's the reality then, you know, like if you're a 500-ish team, like that's fine. Go from there and try and figure it out and become the Pacers where you become a nice 48 win team, 49. I don't know. It's to me, it's a good problem to have. And I think that they view it that way too.
Yeah. One quick question for you. You wrote a great Kemba piece the other day.
Well, I don't know if it's great, but
I wrote a Kemba piece. It was a great piece. What do you think the future is there with him?
Because
he says, and he said in the story, he says everything that you'd want to hear if you're like a fan who wants to stay in Charlotte.
I think he wants to stay. I predict in my 35 random predictions for the season, I predicted they would re-sign him. And I still think that's what will happen. I think he wants to stay. Even though, you know, it's like, it sneaks up on you. Like, if he signs a long-term deal, then this is the last chance to control his career.
Right.
Before he ages out of his prime.
And there's a good chance he never wins a playoff series if he does that.
There is a chance.
Cause it's just hard to, again, that's a team where if you sign him, if he's healthy, you're going to be too good to get a guy that you really need to take the next step.
But I think he legitimately wants to stay. And they obviously want to keep him because they got nothing going on there.
No.
Without Kemba.
No, I mean, literally clear.
Nothing. I mean, who is their second best player?
It might be Miles Bridges.
I mean, it's a really depressing question.
It might be Miles Bridges, who's been pretty good for a rookie. But again, like that's not the right answer.
It's a very depressing question.
Has he been a better player the last 2 years than Kyrie Irving?
He has this year.
That recently on the Hoop Collective, and it was met with derision by our pal Nick Friedel and other people.
Very close.
I agree.
It's very close. Kyrie's size, I do think Kemba in the playoffs is a problem.
Right.
Defensively, you just can hunt him in ways that you can hunt Kyrie, but he at least has a fighting chance when he decides to try.
Yeah.
But it's been very clever. I mean, Kemba's been unbelievable. There was a brief hot second this year where he was leading the league in scoring, like 2 weeks ago, when he put up 60 and then he put up 43. My guess is they'll offer him. My guess is they'll try to not get him for the max. They'll say, we'll give you a 5-year deal, but we'll do it a little bit below the max.
And the crazy thing is too, the way he's playing, he might get the super max or be eligible for it.
Then it becomes a very interesting question for them. I think they'll find a spot where it makes sense for both of them, but we'll see. All right. I got to go on the jump. Like apparently they want me to go on the jump and say some stuff about Toronto. And, then we got a good basketball game tonight. Tim Bontemps, is covering all over the NBA, really, mostly Eastern Seaboard, but thrilled to have you on the team. And thanks for popping up to, this hotel room in an anonymous hotel.
Above Rachel's room.
Above Rachel's room. Always good to talk to you, my friend.
Likewise, man. Thanks for having me.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.